Hello, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of Weekly Advice from Everyday Experts, in which the staff at hubpages.com chooses a hub and looks at it and decides to discuss it. Today, I'm sitting next to James Edmondson, who, as I've mentioned before, is responsible for all of the gorgeous design on hubpages.com.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in.
I'm Simone. Did I introduce myself?
No.
I figure I'm not really worth mentioning.
If you don't know Simone by now, you'll probably never know.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, James, tell me, what kind of person would you say you are?
Since childhood, I've been pretty easygoing, pretty agreeable, not too mean. I grew up the youngest of five brothers, one of which owns Hub Pages. And, another of which was fired from Hub Pages at one time. But yeah, I'm from a big family, and I think overall I'm an okay guy. You know, I'm not a psychopath or anything.
Well, Simone? That's favorable. No comment on my personality.
No, nothing? You just okay. Put me on the spot like that, and then you get off free?
Well, actually, we can talk about what is personality, and maybe I can describe my personality based on those factors.
Right.
So, I think what we're actually going to talk about today is personality and where it comes from, because who knows? It's such this weird, complex thing, and we're specifically going to discuss a hub called, and there's a little word invention here, but peopality or peoplality.
What are you talking about?
The title of the hub is Peoplality. Where does personality come from? Discovering the secrets our brain holds.
Right.
The word invention always gets me. But this is something that To Know Info, who's the author of this hub, typically does.
I think it's peopleality. Peopleality. She's going for.
Peopleality.
As in, like, the study of people.
Yes. Oh.
Which
some people say
is anthropology.
Yeah, except peoplality is so much more fun to say.
Right, I agree.
So
I'm going to open up a women's clothing store.
Called Peoplality. Yeah, there you go.
That's stupid.
Lots of overpriced clothing. But personality is pretty interesting, and where it comes from, geez, that's a big subject.
It certainly is. It's something that I actually think about a lot You know, how our environment shapes us versus how what we are born with shapes us.
Because, absolutely.
I'm getting to an age, I don't know about you, but some of my friends are starting to settle down, have kids. It's very weird.
The marriages
to me.
And then there are the other people who are almost regressing to more childlike state.
Yeah, we were doing very well for a long time and then get a little freaked out by the adult world. But the topic of having kids is very scary to me because recently I've kind of figured out that kids are just such a crapshoot.
That's the scary thing,
You have no idea what you're going to get, and parenting definitely plays in a lot to personality, I think.
But then, I mean, there are couples that will have one kid that is just an angel.
You know,
they have another kid and it's another angel. And then, you know, they get pregnant again and they're like, yeah, this is going to be easy. We've got this down. And that there's this
black
this
sheep.
Demon child.
Yeah,
or,
totally.
Yeah, black sheep if one wants to be nice.
Demon child.
I mean, it happens.
Yeah, I like that.
And they're like, where did that come from? We thought that we nurtured them so right, but maybe personality isn't just...
Yeah, maybe we have no control at all in this.
Yeah, which is...
just scary to me, extremely scary.
Yeah, I'm
not scary enough, you know.
Well, for some, maybe.
For some, it is, though. Yeah, definitely.
I'm willing to sign off the whole producing spawn thing.
Really?
Oh, God. Then the crapshoot part is just one of the many, many things.
Well, then what else goes in there? Because I think we're hitting a really major pillar of your personality right now, Simone, which is...
Well, yeah, which is, to a great extent, neurotic. And funny thing about neuroticism, it's one of the big five personality characteristics.
Oh, interesting.
So, yeah, before we even talk about where personality comes from, we have to say what personality is, which is a big concept on its own because... throughout history, people describe personality differently. What now would be medicated and treated or perhaps put in a straitjacket was the leader.
Right.
Maybe autocratic, maybe a little bit crazy, but, you know, the leader of thousands of men.
Right. And it's one of those things I think that, like, we definitely know what personality means, but to actually put into words as the word defined is kind of a big task when you start to think about it.
Well, yeah, and talking about it too, you know, you used to be like, well, is he agreeable? Yeah. You know, or like, is he an honorable man? And maybe it didn't even matter what his personality was or what a woman's personality was, as long as they conformed to society. So the way that we perceive personality changes and the way that we measure and talk about it changes.
Yeah, the measuring thing I think is very interesting too, because the second you take a test to determine your personality, it seems like the most backwards thing in the world to me.
Yeah, yeah.
And like to rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10. And
yeah, it's weird, but I mean, you have to try something.
Right.
And one thing that is discussed in this article is the big five personality characteristics. Obviously, there are the other ones like the Myers-Briggs and there are so many. But the big five basically breaks down personality into five different characteristics instead of the EMT, you know, there's the intuitive.
Right.
And it's very similar to Myers-Briggs. And basically the five things are this. There's conscientiousness, extroversion, neuroticism, agreeableness, and openness.
So what do they mean by conscientiousness here?
You know, nitpicking, making sure the dishes are washed, you know, like attention to detail, I think, is,
okay.
Yeah, that's the biggest factor with this. And everything in these personality characteristics is on a continuum.
Uh-huh.
So one could theoretically be sort of neutrally even along all of these things. If we want to talk about my personality, I might be fairly neutral on a lot of these, but then there's like neuroticism and it's bing, you know, we're like one end of the spectrum.
So wait, so what does neuroticism mean exactly as it relates to personality?
I think a lot, it has to do with like fear and dread and like just being like, oh my God, you know, stressed
anxiety.
Out.
Anxiety?
Yeah, there's that big anxiety aspect.
Okay.
And one thing that we're going to find out later, thanks to this hub, is that certain of these characteristics have been found to have distinct correlations with brain activity, and others aren't.
Right.
So others with very different degrees of openness, it was found, don't really tend to have parts of their brain light up with different stimuli, whereas people who are on one low end of extroversion and the high end of extroversion will react to things very differently.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the first study in there was about the introversion versus extroversion thing, where
yeah.
They're showing these images to people and measuring their brain activity as these like positive images are coming up versus happy images, and that is it. The introverted people have pretty much no response from either. Is that right?
Yeah, well, it's sort of like that. Yeah, like so basically to set the scene. James here is going to go through an experiment, and we're going to stick him in an fMRI machine, which is sort of like this big tube that you slide on into. So he gets sort of slid in there, and then the scientists are going to show him various pictures. And one picture is of a puppy, and one is of a brownie, and one is of a sunset, and then one is of a gun being pointed at you, and one is of a graveyard.
Right.
And as this happens, the scientists are looking at James's brain and seeing which areas light up in reaction to different photos, which I guess is a way of testing your personalities.
But it does seem a little bizarre to me, too, because the minute someone puts me inside of a closed-off tube...
Yeah, right?
I'm going to freak out.
Is that not going to mess with you a little bit?
But I'm totally claustrophobic. Like, I would lose my mind in there.
Oh,
you know?
See, I think that they're really comforting.
Really?
Yeah. Well, and that's something that I wanted to talk about. So we'll go back to this study, right?
The myriad differences between James and Simone.
Yeah, yeah. And our very different personalities.
For sure.
So in this study that we were talking about, there were 14 women aged 19 to 42 that were shoved in these fMRI machines and were shown these different pictures. Some were supposed to be seen as positive, others supposed to be negative. So obviously the gun being pointed at you is a negative photo, whereas the puppy is positive.
Mm-hmm.
So the difference between these 14 women had to do with their introversion versus extroversion, which I guess can be equated with the extroversion continuum on the Big Five personality traits scale. And they tried to find out if these people think differently and if their personalities correlate with different areas of brain activity. And yes, extroverts did show a higher response to positive images. So, James, you're extroverted, right?
I don't know. I've never taken the Myers-Briggs test.
Oh, really?
I would probably say I'm right in the middle.
Do you get tired after you...
Oh, yeah, let's do the test.
Do you feel tired after spending a day with your friends? Do you need to be alone, or are you kind of just like, let's, you know, go see a movie, or like, let's keep doing this?
It depends. Sometimes I'm totally cool. Sometimes I do like a little alone time. For instance, Saturday, you know, hung out with friends all day, and then Sunday I was just cool to hang out by myself.
Wow, you might be like the perfect happy medium. Okay, well, so you're not the good example. I'm a better example. If I'm with people during the day, I have to be alone at night. Like, I have
really?
To be.
Yes. So you need, like, half and half?
Pretty much, mostly
alone time.
No, I'm half and half. Like, if I'm alone all day, I'll get sad, but yeah.
Yeah.
So I'll be an introvert example.
Weird? Figuring out exactly...
The sweet spot?
The sweet spot for you, and it's different for everyone.
It is, which is really... That's how I don't understand how couples get married. Or maybe the only factor that, you know, is required is that they both need the exact same amount of time alone and together. I don't know.
That's a really interesting point.
Because I see it in couples where one person is more extroverted than the other.
Isn't that always the case?
One is more needy while the other one's always pushing the other one away. Yeah. It's terrible.
Yeah, it is.
Someone needs to freaking match these things up.
Yeah.
But such are the struggles of life.
Robots of the future will take care of it.
Thank God. Thank God. I can't wait.
Then you can finally get married.
Somewhere. Yes. Yes. The day shall come. Until then, sadness. But if I were shoved into this fMRI machine, according to this experiment, or if I would be performing in a similar way to this very small sample of 14 women, I'm introverted, and...
Oh, it was 14 women?
I know it's a small sample, but...
Oh, brother.
You know what? These fMRI machines are expensive, so this is...
Yeah, that's
this
true.
Is the best they could do. And honestly, I mean, to preface everything, our understanding of the brain is so, so limited. Mm-hmm. People are just kind of figuring these things out for the first time. So
this
is all super preliminary, but basically they found that extroverted people who are not like your female host today showed a more marked response to positive images. When they saw the puppy, their brain just lit up because they're like, oh my gosh, it's a puppy. And introverts showed little or no response to positive images. So I'm looking at this puppy and it's just like, nothing. And they showed more activity in reaction to negative images. So I see a gun pointed at me and I'm getting even more excited. But interestingly, the parts of my brain that are lighting up more when I see the graveyard are in different areas that are not so associated with emotion.
Like what?
Like with more analytical areas, I'm assuming. So instead of emotionally reacting to everything, more like the extroverts did in this study, introverts were more... They were reacting more to negative imagery, but they were not emotionally reacting to it.
So they weren't, like, getting turned on by a graveyard or anything.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
Or the gun in their face.
Yeah, maybe they're just like, oh, look, a gun. Let's just figure this out in our Spock-like ways.
Huh.
Yeah, I think that is interesting. But this whole idea of, like you were pointing out, being in a machine, maybe feeling claustrophobic because it is either a very comforting sleeping bag-like tube or a very menacing cave of death / coffin.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to get weird results. And also, I have an issue with the photos that they were using. I mean, the examples, you know, like brownies, sunset, graveyard, gun. What if I love guns?
Yeah.
You know, what if a puppy tried to eat my face once and they're really scary?
What if you see a graveyard and you think, oh man, that reminds me of playing hide and go seek when I was little and that was so much fun.
I know. So it
could be different for everyone.
That's one of the really big starting points of why studies like this are so impossible.
Right, yeah.
You can't, I mean, the way that people think, the way that people see things and their associations are going to be super, super different.
But the point is that there does seem to kind of be like a relationship between introversion and a kind of analytical way of thinking versus extroversion and a very emotional way of thinking. So
absolutely.
That's the point.
Yeah, yeah. And in this hub, Tanoa Po highlighted another study focusing specifically on the big five traits. In that study, they found that extroverted people are people high on the extroversion continuum in the big five thinger, found that they have, let's see, how to put this. They seem to have larger medial orbifrontal cortexes. That's a mouthful.
So the physical mass of that part of the brain is bigger.
Yeah, it's either that, or if I was reading it wrong, then their reaction there, like the bloom that they saw when they were in the fMRI machine, was larger. Mm. So that's associated with rewards. So it seems that from various studies that Tanoa Po highlighted in her hub, people who are extroverted are a little bit more out to seek that kind of instant gratification of being with people and seeing them smile. Mm-hmm. Whereas, and this makes perfect sense, introverted people who spend more time alone are more likely to derive pleasure from more analytical things or less of that like visceral feedback because they're deprived of it.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's a rather interesting thing. Another sort of trend amongst these studies that are highlighted in the hub is that the way that brains connect are different depending on different personality types.
Yeah, and the way the fluid moves within the brain, which is something that we can't measure just yet, they were saying, but the way it moves and the connections that are made is really important in there.
Yeah, and it's... God, it's just, it's too much to...
It's totally crazy. But the fact that our emotions are in part, and personality, are determined by just science, you know, just chemical reactions and things happening in our heads, like not thoughts, but just, you know, physical things happening. It's just crazy. It just seems... totally bizarre.
It is. I mean, for example, you're a very, very creative person. I mean, you're doing all this design work all the time. In studies, like one that was pointed out, a University of Bonn study, that suggests that people like you who are more creative have stronger connections and more connections throughout the different parts of your brain.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Because there's just more stuff flowing around, whereas someone who's maybe less creative and less outgoing is not going to have so many. And that there's actually a physical... thing going on. And in many ways, I think that's comforting because, I don't know, as a child or maybe back in the day, people would be like, you just need to be more creative, you know, or like people still in books are saying, no, just be more creative, be more easygoing. And you can't.
Yeah, exactly.
Like
definitely.
It's a physical thing. It's like trying to walk with a leg that you don't have.
That's kind of a good way of putting it, I think. Like, it's not just people telling us this. Like, more often, I think it would be yourself telling you these things where you
like,
see
why
someone
can't I be
that,
more?
Yeah, that you really admire and you want to be like these people that you admire, but not something that naturally manifests itself for you. And that can be kind of disheartening. Tough thing to deal with.
Well, but then here's the other interesting discussion is, I mean, in part of the article, she talks about how, you know, genetics influence things. And I mean, at least to the extent that your genes may influence the amount of serotonin that's floating around in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just, it may mean that you're more likely to be depressed throughout your life because you just ain't getting the serotonin that you need. And usually that would mean, yeah, like you're stuck like that. But now you can take all these drugs that kind of boost those levels or boost the uptake, and suddenly you can change that. And as our technology and understanding of how the brain functions improves and expands, we're going to have more drugs, more fixes, more gene therapy that we can utilize that will actually change those things.
Right.
Which...
It's a scary thing.
Would you change? Would you take? I mean, see, and this is the issue because we can already kind of do this by, you know, taking antidepressants or something.
Right.
And everyone who does has a really hard choice. I mean, everyone I know who's ever made that decision has always wondered whether or not it's actually worth it to change their brain chemistry or change their personality. It's almost like suicide, right? Because, that's pushing it. That's pushing it. But there's this very Buddhist, perhaps, perception of who you are is what you are this very moment. All of your happy emotions, all of your sad emotions. And that self will cease to exist every, you know, right, that self just died. You know, like, who you are right now is who you are.
So,
and if you're going to take away a part of your personality, that person is no more. I guess it's kind of scary to take something that would shift you away from a person that you naturally were.
So it's a suicide in a very, very...
an extremely minute way, which in many cases actually prevents physical suicide, because sometimes you really need help.
And
really
it's a suicide and instant rebirth at the same time.
Exactly. So and in many ways it's being saved. But it's certainly changing a part of you.
Right.
And it, you know, there's always this question of like, well, if I could fix that, what else would I fix? Yeah. And would I still be me?
For instance, if there was a pill to make you more creative.
Yeah.
Would I take that?
Yeah.
I'd probably maybe give it a try, you know?
Well, those are called drugs.
Nah, I disagree with that. Because
you never know.
I don't know. Without getting too specific, not such a fan. But the thing is, they do have a reputation for that, which doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
From an art history standpoint, a lot of people have
totally. Yeah, benefited. It's worked for a bunch of people.
Yeah, but just not for everyone.
Just like antidepressants or whatever, it's not going to work for everyone.
Yeah, but it's strange to think that we have these options, and what is me, and what is okay for me to be too.
Yeah.
And what new things are not going to be okay? For example, in Asia, in Japan, depression didn't really exist for a long time until antidepressants came around, and then they were like, we're going to teach you about depression so that we can sell you antidepressants. What is going to be introduced to us next that's wrong with us that we need to change
if we
have the ability to influence these aspects of our personality?
To say, though, that depression didn't exist in a culture seems like a very, very bold claim to make. I don't know.
Well, yeah, people were sad, but it wasn't seen as a sickness the same way that it was seen here.
Right.
So new things will be seen as sicknesses.
Okay.
Whereas before...
it's not that they will be born out of thin air. It's that they will be classified as something that you can fix.
Exactly. Like, once I read a really fascinating book on the history of obsessive compulsive disorder. Mm-hmm. And it's always been around, right? But it wasn't until recently that people... we're like, we need to treat this. Because before they'd just be like, yeah, that kid just loves, you know, counting chickens. Just loves them. You know, and many, many famous people did have OCD, but it just wasn't seen as a problem. And in many ways, they kind of just, they were famous because they ended up using it to do something crazy and cool. But many people probably died because it went wrong. Uh-huh. So it's interesting to think that these aspects of personality may someday be influenced. But of course, there are the other things. I mean, it's not just genetics. It's not just your biology, but it's society and experiences.
Definitely.
Do you think anything happened to you that changed your personality for good?
Well, for sure. Being from a large family, I think, has a lot to do with my personality. Mm. I think my mom and my dad have had a huge impact. For instance, growing up, I was a lot more of a people pleaser, you know?
Ah.
Like, I really wanted to make my folks happy.
Yeah.
And now I'm kind of not so focused on that, which is weird because up until that point, I kind of figured that you're just born the way you are.
Right.
And there's not a whole lot that you can really do to change it.
Yeah.
And any attempts will be futile, but I think you kind of can if you want to, and if you work at it and stuff like that. So
that's true, and I think external influences have a big impact on who you are too.
Mm-hmm.
Because you see it a lot when people go off to college. Suddenly, they're not living with their old friends in their old environment anymore, and suddenly, like, they can they realize, wait a second, I never liked this.
Yeah.
This is just what my friends liked, or this is just what my parents wanted me to do, or this is just what I did because I lived in that small town. But I'm really this entirely different person.
Have no interest in that
whatsoever. Yeah.
And how did I ever trick myself into thinking that I did?
Yeah.
It's a very, very weird thing when you look back on that stuff, and it's not like you're embarrassed by it, but you're like, man, I did not know myself so well.
Yeah, it's... it's kind of scary because you don't know, like, sometimes you wonder, how much of me is comprised of what my friends like or what my, you know, people, my coworkers or my, you know, city likes.
But not to say that that's not all right, you know.
Well, and that's not to say that it's not you. Yeah. It's you right now, so it's you. But boy, this is an interesting, very interesting part of the way that life works.
Right.
We don't think about it a lot. And we don't think about the connection between these very, very gushy, like, not clear things have to do with these well, equally gushy, but physically so, aspects of something inside our head.
You know? And it is such a ridiculous thing to try and wrap science around.
It's true. I mean, they're still making some progress. I mean, we have things organized into different sections now that all have funny names, like amygdala and hippocampus and striatum.
But then we also have different things divided into sections like the conscientiousness, extroversion, neuroticism, agreeableness, and openness, which seem a lot more arbitrary than the anatomy of the brain. You know?
Well, and I think that maybe our understanding of the brain components is going to influence how we evaluate personality too. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, we know that the prefrontal cortex, for example, is known for complex decision-making, and we've found, as studies as To Know Info has pointed out in this hub, that people who are high on the conscientiousness continuum in the big five personality traits section have more activity in the prefrontal cortex. Whereas another study found that study on the big five traits and the various sections of the brain that light up associated with them, openness didn't really see any reactions. Uh-huh. So maybe in the future personality test related profiles, we're not going to have an openness because it doesn't correspond with anything physically in the brain. Openness is maybe something more that's just trained.
And we're just so still in the dark ages with all this stuff.
Exactly.
It's not as bad as phrenology, you know, the...
phrenology is real. Phrenology is real.
I forget what even sorts of things were pointing to different parts of the...
I think that, like, each, you know, old painting, you know, showing, like, which section meant... Which section of the head corresponded with what was just made up.
Totally made up.
Yeah. I'm sure there were like five different ones too. You know, like those like old like Regency England parties, you know, they'd pull it out and be like, oh yes, you are. Oh, you know, you're so compassionate because you just have this giant dent right in the middle of your head. You know, and then the other one would be like, no, according to my little booklet here, this means that you are going to be a murderer.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't think that, yeah, I mean.
I would want to see the person labeling those things for the first time and just saying, all right, what am I going to put for this part of the brain?
Or if they use one model, you know, with a really dented head. Something very strange. Yeah. Well, yeah, we're ahead of phrenology, to be sure.
Right.
And I think that the final sort of closing thought or conclusion we can have from this article is that as we understand more, as we have studies with sample sizes larger than 14 and maybe figure out how to better use an fMRI machine, we'll be able to finally discover the difference between the things, the various origins of personality, like society, like culture, like nurture, and like genetics and biology. So, I mean, we're finding that, yes, extroversion and conscientiousness and maybe neuroticism do really have spots in the brain, and maybe a lot of that's hardwired, but other things like openness are trained. And so we'll be able to learn, like, what can you influence with drugs, or like, what's better to treat via medication, whereas what is better to help via cognitive therapy. Or, you know, what can you influence as a parent? So maybe, you know, having a kid won't be so scary if you know that, like, well, I can make him stop being a jerk by being a better parent. Like, that's my fault. But, you know, it's not my fault that they are super shy and introverted. Mm-hmm. That's just how they're born.
So I guess the final question for me then is this sort of study and this science really progress for our culture? Like, is learning these things really bettering us as individuals? Or is it just kind of, you know, something we're going to do and study so that we can make more drugs to sell to people?
That's a really good question.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
I'm going to leave it up to all y'all listening to us. If you think that our lives shall be improved, or...
Not our lives improved, but our cultural value,
oh,
like... Yeah.
If you think that our... Well, if you think that society will benefit...
Yes, exactly.
As opposed to drug manufacturers only...
Benefiting.
From this research... Let us know. Let us know what you think by emailing us at podcast@hubpages.com. You can also send tips for future hubs for us to discuss to that email address, podcast@hubpages.com, which I'm really excited about. Because I'll be checking it. I really will. So yeah, hey, we want to hear what you think about this very interesting issue. And until then, we shall just be pondering this and scratching our heads.
Okay. Thank you for listening.
Cheers.